Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast, pitchless.com. I'm your host, Eric Samolsky, joined on a pretty special day by Nick Pollock as we start going through your rankings heading into the 2026 fantasy baseball season.
It's also our time, Eric.
It is our time.
Because fantasy football is stupid. And I just want to say to everybody, yes, everything is a little bit delayed. I apologize. I threw out my back last week and it pushed everything back about 5 days. So I'm writing as fast as I can. And I have my rankings behind in a Google Sheet as I update them. They aren't live for everybody, but if you have PL Pro, you have access to my rolling Google Sheet so you can get the most updated rankings as I go through 300, 400 starters. So, but today, we got the top 10. Yeah. And I sat down, I really determined what this is going to be, and I got it down.
And it was a big day. It's a big day for you last week because throwing out your back, I mean, what officially, I'm here on behalf of an entire group to welcome you to middle age. You're welcome. We're happy to have you.
It was a matter of time, us tall people, you know, tall it man happened. Back. I knew it was coming.
Yeah, it happens.
Oh, gosh. Glad to be here, Eric.
Yeah. Well, we're happy to have you. It was only a matter of time, and we're thrilled. We are also thrilled to go through these rankings in podcast form. You're all going to get them in chunks of 10. That way they're a little more easily digestible for everybody to kind of go through. And again, we encourage you, you know, all the starting pitchers will be mentioned and you can go back through and listen to these throughout the course of the preseason, throughout the course of spring training to get our thoughts on these pitchers. I will mention the tiers in here. We know that Nick, you know, takes a lot of time with those tiers. So when the rankings are out there, make sure you go through the tiers and kind of read and see the larger scope. Some of these episodes are going to cut tiers off in the middle, and we'll do our best to kind of keep you posted on all of that. And as always, you know, the tiers themselves are more important than the rankings inside the tiers. If the tier goes from 10 to 19 and you want to know why somebody is at 17 and not at 11, it's a little, you know, nitpicky within the tier, and the tier is the larger construct and you can move them around, you know, as you see fit. Yeah. And then again, final reminder, as we do for all of this, Nick's rankings and my rankings are both more focused on 12 team redraft league formats. So if you're thinking draft and holds, if you're thinking 15 team leagues, there are going to be some things that are slightly different in this format.
Yeah, and it's really important to understand that this is not a best ball league. I say it 20 million times in the preseason, but a lot of people will say, well, this guy's 40th on the player rater or something along those lines. And player rater is all about guys who go 6 months straight and have a ton of volume. And how we do our rankings is understanding that you're not going to be rostering maybe half of the starters that you actually draft by the end of the year. Right. It's all about getting guys that you know you're not going to drop initially and then playing the game of the waiver wire appropriately, where you're taking risk in the second half and you're more willing to go for a guy on the upside side who you can make a quick decision on than going for that Toby who is okay.
Right.
But you can probably find that on the wire if you need to, and you'd rather go for that higher upside thing that could work out. That is how I do my rankings, which means that the 50s, 60s, 70s or so are going to be different than where you look elsewhere if you're trying to do a draft and hold or you're, I don't know, just something that isn't a 12-team redraft. Probably 15-teamers has the biggest distinction is around that mark.
Yeah. And so even though we didn't talk about this before we started recording, I'm going to just throw this at you right now. We're going to do some themes because why not? We don't have that many tiers in each episode, so it'll be easier for you to go through it. And I wanted to do something that's going to be, you know, ongoing through a few episodes. So it's going to be Olympic events.
I knew it would be. Why, Eric? Why could it possibly be on your mind? Nick,
because the Olympics are happening right now on NBC and Peacock, and I will be beginning my shift on Moguls and Aerials. And so if you happen to either be watching in primetime or at 4:45 in the morning on East Coast time, to the live coverage of Moguls and Aerials, I'll be a part of that team, and I'm super excited. And so we're just going to keep promoting the Olympics.
Yeah, Eric has to be ready to go at like 1:30 in the morning or something like that. Yeah. So he's going to sleep in like an hour or two. It's the middle of the day on Monday, the 9th of February. And you know what? Let's just go. Tier one here, yeah. Eric. Who's in it?
Tier one. So tier one is a tier of three people. It is starting pitcher number one, Garrett Crochet. Number two, Paul Skeens. Number three, Tarek Skubal. What's this tier called and why is it called?
This is the dream team, baby. Definitively just the best of the best. And as we go through these, I'm going to try as best as I can not to spend more than 5 minutes on any one guy. And I feel like if we're going to save some time, it's between these three. Because, look, if you want to put Skubal first, go ahead. Do your thing. All three of these guys are clearly safer than the rest. The reason I have Crochet first is because he has the highest win potential. You have Skeens second because I think he has the best ratio potential. And then you have Skubal, who's a mix of the two, I think has a little bit more of a likelihood for regression from last year than the others. You can make that argument for Skeens' ERA and whip, as well as he doesn't have anything outside of the four-seamer really against lefties that he loves. But yeah, I think all three of them are just incredible. So go with whoever you want if that's your play.
Yeah, I'll give you a pass on that first one because the Dream Team isn't an event, but you know, it's the Olympics and that's fine.
It's the Olympics. I thought the whole thing was Olympics. You want the event? Is that what you want?
I like events, but yeah, you could do whatever you want.
You could do what you want.
I want events. I want to know what events you like. Is it curling? Where's curling? You know, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, for Scott Chu, it's number one of winter. So listen, fine. Mixed curling. US, here we go.
U.S. mixed curling going to a gold medal game for the first time ever. Also,
is that right?
Yeah. Also, both people on the team are named Corey, and my wife's name is Corey, so we're celebrating over here for Corey's all over the United States.
Incredible.
Of all different spellings. So I have Skeens the clear number three in this trio, but I agree with everything you said about, like, this is the three. For me, it was just like, I think Skeens is likely going to finish third out of these three in innings. And last year, Crochet and Skubal were top two in baseball in strikeout rate. And I think they're going to also have higher strikeout rates than Skeens. I think Skeens also has the worst win potential of the three on the Pirates. And so that puts him third out of three in three categories that I think are A, important, and also B, important for fantasy baseball success. And so that's why Skeens is my third. But I agree with you that you're just picking nits between these three guys, and they're the top three.
I mean, let's say, Paul Skeens in two straight years, sub 2 ERA.
Yes.
And let's say that Garrett Crochet ends the season with like a 2.7 or something like that. It's like a 40% change if that's the case again from Skeens. Not necessarily saying that that's what's going to happen. In my view, it was just like, look, I really do see Skeens as a hard contact mitigator. Like absurd. He's your Toby who happens to also be a 30% strikeout rate guy who throws 99. Yep. And it's really just unbelievable. They're all like little things he could do more. He could throw this sinker more often to right-handers than he does currently. Against lefties, I think he should be throwing the splinker more than he is already. He could get better on his changeup to lefties as well. Spin isn't the greatest asset for Skeens, and he has like an 18% swing strike rate on his four-seamer last year to left-handers, but also they hit it kind of hard because they're hunting it a bit. So Skeens could theoretically get better from last year pretty easily, I think.
And I think the team context is better. The lineup is definitely better heading into this year than home park last year.
And so, yeah, maybe, I mean, look, maybe I actually, in my heart, I'm like, maybe it is Skubal ahead of Skeens. I just don't want to underrate the fact that getting 170, 180 innings of absurdly elite ratios is really, really helpful. I think it's more helpful than getting like an extra 20 strikeouts or something like that, or 20 or 30.
I appreciate that. I buy that. We'll move on to the next tier, which starts with number four, Brian Wu. Number five, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Number six, Max Fried. Number seven, Christopher Sanchez. Number eight, Logan Gilbert. Number nine, Hunter Green. Number 10, Hunter Brown. Number 11, Shohei Ohtani. What's this tier?
So, Eric, what is that event in the Winter Olympics where they have to ski and then cross-country skiing or whatever, and then also shoot?
Skiathlon.
Yeah, that's the one, because these guys are all jacks of all trades.
Yep, I like that.
Okay. And they're just like, you look at this and go, what?
Also, just in the something you would appreciate, because you appreciate fair play and sportsmanship.
Sure do.
In one of the men's skiathlon events, after the shooting, The skiers picked up their poles to start skiing again. And I believe it was a skier from Great Britain accidentally stepped on the pole of another competitor. And so kind of like ripped the pole out of his hand and then gave the competitor his pole and started continuing with just one pole. And I was like, that's sportsmanship, man. Instead of that's being, oh, I didn't mean it. Sorry. Like he just gave him his own and dealt with it on his own. So skiathlon here. We have the same 4-5. We have them flipped. But I don't have that much to say about those guys. I mean, you can say whatever you want about Wu or Yamamoto. I think, you know, they're guys who I believe get unfairly dinged for like innings limits, like duration. Sure. You know, last year we thought that about Brian Wu, all the elbow injuries, he's not gonna pitch a full season, and he did. And Yamamoto is getting dinged a lot for like, well, he only pitched 170 whatever innings last year. He's going to pitch in the World Baseball Classic. He pitched in the postseason. And he pitched over 190 innings in back-to-back seasons in Japan. Like, this isn't a fragile-armed guy. And if he only gives you 170, 175 innings last year, like that was – or sorry, this year, that was enough last year also. So you don't need 190 innings from Yamamoto to make him a top 6-7 starter.
Sure. I think it's pretty simple. My argument that Yamamoto's ceiling is capped. It's just not as capped with other guys here. And I don't think that Yamamoto is that much better or that much of a lock to be better too, that I would overlook it, right? There are all these different tiebreakers you can go with. The real thing I care about is just safety. Just like you are going to be pitching constantly and you are productive. You know, this is one of the things that I do when it's the preseason, especially like the last week before the season starts. I do an AMAM Reddit and I get these questions like, all right, how do you think about my rotation? I've got this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. All I ever do is I don't just like take their numbers and projections and make it out. I go, cool, do you have an SP1? You do. He's great. Cool. Awesome. Do you have an SP2, 3? Like, what are your guys? Like, oh, cool. You have like 3, you know, SP1/2s. That's awesome. That's great. You know, how's the depth looking? I don't go, oh, you got Yamamoto instead of Wu. Right. You know, I don't do that. All I'm trying to say is, look, we don't know exactly how it's going to end up. If it's going to be a 2.94 ERA again for Wu, or it's going to be a 2.75 or a 3.10, you know, those aren't different. And the skill set and the output of on a per start basis of Yamamoto and Wu, really of a lot of these guys, like it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then what are the other factors that we know would be different? And look, Yamamoto just went 187 innings and theoretically could go more than that as he gets better in his development and is more efficient and learns how to work in his secondaries even more than he did last year with a four-seamer and sinker combination that is such a good foundation. And then I see Yamamoto and I say, yeah, you had 30 starts last year. And also you threw fewer innings than Wu, who also had 30 starts. But then again, of course, you had the opening series in Japan, which really wasn't a start. And yeah, you just are going to be capped for at least 10 innings fewer, if not, you know, 15, 20 or so underneath a guy like Wu. So I said, you know what? I would rather have Brian Wu.
I like that. I understand all that. Max Fried, another guy who comes in sixth for you, also kind of, I think, has the injury question mark hovering over him because he's missed time, I think, in like each of the last three seasons. And it always feels like it might be more, right? Like, oh, it's a forearm. And then it's not a big thing. I just feel like Max Fried is that type of pitcher who is just, like I put it, he's about as safe as they come. I said, when he's on the mound, he's really good in every category without being a truly elite standout in any. That's
so,
kind of how I see him.
So what's kind of funny with Max Fried is he's just always been great since 2020. I mean, really the only bad one was before then, 2019, 2018, whatever. But with Fried, it's always been a case of being a slow starter and then needs 2 or 3 starts. And all of a sudden, as Cashew moves my camera, because that's what Cashew does, the cat. with Max Fried, he needs a couple starts. He gets into rhythm, and then he dominates to the tune of like a 2.5 ERA and a 1.05 whip or so. And once again, I am doing the thing where I say, look, who are the elite ratio guys who also have like a 25% strikeout rate? And that's Max Fried. Last year, he went 32 starts, and he had about a 4-start series in the middle of the season that were was just not as excellent as the others. And he just had a moment. I was like, oh, not really my best. And then he got back into it. I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's pretty much it with Max Fried. I sat there and I looked at everybody else and I said, okay, who is most likely to regress? And Max Fried isn't. Max Fried is just Max Fried. So cool.
Cool. I take it. I don't know that there's holes to poke in number 7, Christopher Sanchez, except that he just kind of like, it's a big jump, right? Like we all knew that Christopher Sanchez was somebody that we thought had a lot of talent. We were excited by the possibility of him adding another pitch, which didn't come to fruition, but he did add velocity. There is nothing about what he did that feels fluky, except for the fact that like, that's a huge jump in where he was to where he's ranked now. And this is not I understand that this is not a perfect comparison, but it reminds me a lot of when things broke right for Pablo Lopez and all of a sudden we were ranking him inside the top 10 heading into the following season. And then it didn't work out. Now, the Pablo Lopez thing was more connected to injury and Christopher Sanchez is not. But it's like strange to see Christopher Sanchez's name in the top, you know, 6-7 pitchers and starting pitcher lists.
It's so funny. I have gone through this whole journey of where should I rank Christopher Sanchez? And I have been saying a lot of like, man, I don't want to rank him too high because he profiles out to me traditionally as a Logan Webb type of, hey, cool, here are a lot of sinkers, and that's going to be susceptible to BABIP in a given year. And you had a 124 whip in 24, and all of a sudden you have a 106. Like, what's going on? And so in preparation for this, I hadn't gone to the Phillies yet with my team breakdowns. And with Christopher Sanchez, Cashew just cannot be stopped right now. sorry, guys. Cashew just needs all the attention. With Christopher Sanchez, it comes down to strikeouts. Mm-hmm. And he went from 20% to 26%, which effectively actually brought down both the ERA and the whip because he had the same home run rates. And the increase in strikeouts means fewer balls in play, which means that the 300 BABIP that he has typically isn't being shown. So that means that all of a sudden he has a lower hit rate. And that also means that he has a higher left on base rate because there's fewer opportunities for these guys to knock in base runners. Even an out in play could be an RBI. So, okay, then you got to ask yourself, is that strikeout rate going to stick around? How did he get that? The sinker, yes, increased in velocity, but it did one more thing that I didn't realize. It added drop. He had more depth on that sinker that made it far more effective. And he increased his put-away rates on his sinker and changeup from 11% on the sinker to 20% against right-handers. And then with his changeup went from 20% to 28%. Now I talk about put away rate a lot, saying this is your indication of something being real. That does he have a put away rate that is unsustainable given the talent or what he's throwing? And I wouldn't necessarily say that this is exactly what it should be. Maybe a little bit lower on the sinker because the 20% on that sinker doesn't quite seem right. But the 20% on a changeup with an elite changeup as a swatch, that sounds cool. He's a 7-foot extension guy. More velocity means he gets more of an expression of that extension. And remember, swatch is a southpaw with a tight changeup. Yes. We saw a lot of those last year, right? The other aspect that I found was that Christopher Sanchez's slider got much better. And this was also a pitch that gained movement. What we saw in 2024 on the slider from Christopher Sanchez was about was less movement horizontally, and it didn't actually have as much drop as it used to. But then he landed it beautifully all of a sudden. He tightened the entire locations of this against left-handers. And that's a huge, huge deal. This used to be more of a sporadic pitch, and that became a major offering as well for him. 23% swinging strike rate on that slider all of a sudden for Christopher Sanchez as he flipped the usage of changeup versus slider in 24 to 25. And that's a huge deal. It also meant that the changeup could be saved more for strikeouts, and all of a sudden a 31% swing strike rate on it as he threw it over 55% of the time in two strike counts. So long story short, yeah, he probably isn't going to be a 26% strikeout guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Christopher Sanchez is going to be something like a 23% probably, maybe 24. Maybe the velocity comes down a little bit because maybe that thing that scared us last year in the forearm is actually something that's real. I don't know. We did see some velocity adjustments initially when that did happen. At the same time, I don't really see too much in the sinker and the changeup locations. Maybe, you know, throwing a little bit more inside to right-handers with that sinker and stunning them possibly helped. But for the most part, adding extra sink, having that extra velocity, and having a better commanded slider is everything that happened last year. And that's very believable for me. That is actually like, okay, hold on a second. That makes sense. So I sat there and said, fine. Like, even in 2024, Christopher Sanchez was still a 330 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be good for ERA for a while. And then it really comes down to, where's the whip going to land? Where's the strikeout rate going to land? Let's say it's in between. You want to play that game? Fine. 23% strikeout rate and then 110, 112 whip over 180 innings. Like, yeah. Okay, fine. That I'm happy with that, right? So that means, fine, I need to put him in my top 10. I looked at the other ones and I pretty much said, oh boy, I guess I'm doing this because he's essentially Max Fried then. So there he is.
Oh boy.
Seven Christopher Sanchez.
Oh boy. Yeah, there's a couple. But he said, well, I put him over, look at the other pitches and see who I'm going to put him over. There are some other guys I put over Christopher Sanchez, but we'll talk about those guys after this break. So one of the guys I had over Christopher Sanchez was Logan Gilbert, who you have right after. I understand that, like, maybe it's wish casting on Logan Gilbert because he had some injuries last year. We've talked about his inability to, you know, maintain a relatively consistent approach, especially with the secondaries. You know, even despite the injuries and the struggles last year, like a 103 whip and a 32% strikeout rate, you can start to see where the upside comes from. And then there's obviously the elite home park. And I do just feel like one of these seasons we're going to get it all to break right. And it's going to be like a 2.9 ERA with like a whip around one and a 30 something percent strikeout rate for Logan Gilbert pitching on a playoff team. And you're going to be super happy. And he's a top five starting pitcher in fantasy baseball. I'm not saying that's going to be this year, but I think that's within the range of outcomes. And I don't know why I feel safer with him than Sanchez. Maybe it's like the track record of at least being like a top 15-ish starter. I don't know. I guess I can't make sense of it too much.
Look, I actually, I found myself saying, maybe I want Logan Gilbert more than Christopher Sanchez. And I kept kind of going back and forth on it. Honestly, the tiebreaker for me was the fact that Logan Gilbert missed time with a flexor strain.
Yeah.
And that is more concerning than the mystery thing that we had with Christopher Sanchez. Now, of course, we've seen guys like Max Fried have a flexor strain and be fine the next year. We've had stuff like that all the time, and it's just, all right, okay, but there is that ding. So that's honestly the reason why I have Logan Gilbert underneath. What I'm very happy about with Logan Gilbert is that, yeah, he looks like he is a 27% plus strikeout rate arm. The four-seamer slider splitter, I'll take that all day. The four-seamer hopefully can continue to be upstairs a little bit more. The slider being this all-encompassing strike pitch for him with his elite extension. And the splitter, he's actually decent at getting strikes with it. So awesome. I'm happy with that. He needed a put-away pitch for lefties. That's a put-away pitch for lefties. Sweet. I'm okay with that. I also do need to mention that he is more home run prone than Christopher Sanchez. So when it comes to the ERA side, I'm giving the favorite to Christopher Sanchez, just because if you are a ground ball focus arm, that means that you're going to sacrifice whip over ERA. So think of Joe Ryan, massive fly ball guy, great whip. Always a little bit of a question in the home run category, but then you see Logan Webb, great ERA, but questionable in the whip, right? It's the same kind of idea. So with Logan Gilbert being not necessarily an extreme fly ball guy, but throwing a fastball that can be hit, that is going to turn those home runs higher than Sanchez. And yes, he's had over a homer per nine for each of the last 3 years, actually twice exactly being 1.37. So that is the area that I feel like, okay, cool. ERA is going to go towards Christopher Sanchez. Whip might favor Logan Gilbert. He might have more total strikeouts. I say it that way because Christopher Sanchez, I'm banking on having more innings. But yeah, it's very close. And I think just the injury ding is the only real problem. Actually, one more. I should say wins. Sure. Christopher Sanchez does go a little bit deeper into games for the Phillies than Logan Gilbert does consistently. So there is higher potential to go 8 innings randomly for Christopher Sanchez, which then will make, will give him another level. Also, Logan Gilbert hasn't had a double-digit win since 23. He had 9 in 33 starts in 24 and then 6 in 25 starts last year.
Yeah. Is injury or potential injury a little bit of what keeps Hunter Green at 9 for you? I say this knowing that I also had Hunter Green at 9. And so I don't know that I'm like, it's definitely injuries, but I think there is an injury component to it. Even though, you know, last year's injury was not to his
groin,
it's
interesting.
That.
Everything is connected though, right?
Yes.
Even though it's not an arm injury, it's because it takes a lot of strength in your lower body to throw.
Yes.
Right. Max Meyer, I think of too, when he was increasing his velocity, he had hip problems. And so it's just because it isn't an arm injury doesn't necessarily mean that something isn't great.
True.
And that's just a fluke injury or something like that. But yeah, it's injuries. It's the fact that Hunter Green hasn't thrown more than 150 innings in a season. Sorry, it's 150.1. Okay, yeah. Please do not send me that email.
Yes.
And that's really it. You know, I just want guys in my top 10 for the most part who have done it before, who I can say, yes, you are going to do that. And Hunter Green is the toughest one because it's like, well, you are so supremely talented. And you don't have the same injury ding as like Tyler Glasnow or Chris Sale, but there is one. And I don't know what to do exactly. It's just when you throw so hard, when you throw even harder than you did the previous year, it's like 99.5 average velocity on his four seamer. Also found strikes with his slider. Oh man, I remember, I think it was last year, he had a game where, like in spring training, went 15 for 15 strikes with a slider. I was like, this is it. Oh man, finally consistency. And no, it's not the splitter. The splitter is just, oh gosh, it needs to go away. I wouldn't be surprised if eventually Hunter Green adds a sinker, because everyone should have a sinker. You know, Aaron Judge told, you know, I think it was, that the hardest thing for him to do is deal with pitchers who throw both the four seamer and a sinker.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked. Yeah. We have talked so much about like the multiple fastball variations, and I think it is a very real thing, and I think it will continue to be a real thing.
So I imagine there'll be something at some point that Hunter Green actually makes as a third offering, especially when the velocity isn't 99 to 100. But I don't know. He's too good as a per game starter, and yeah, I just had to put him up here.
Yep. The last one for this episode, because it's the last one within the top 10. It's Hunter Brown. I feel like we do the joke all the time about your take on Hunter Brown, but I know that, you know, obviously you are a fan of Hunter Brown, or else he wouldn't be in the top 10. And there is a little bit of the, maybe like some of the parts is greater than the individual pieces, in terms of like, there's no one pitch where you go, man, that pitch is awesome. Especially with, you know, in particular with his secondaries. But he's, you know, been pretty good and has pitched pretty well. I, you know, mentioned in the First Pitch Arizona presentation Fastball zone rate under 50% wasn't great for me when you have questions about the overall arsenal and then you also don't have pinpoint command of the four-seam fastball. And he didn't need it. I'm not saying he's not good, but I do get why he's on the back end of this top 10 rather than being like up where Christopher Sanchez is.
Yeah, what's really cool about Hunter Brown is that he has a four-seamer sinker combination that he commands really well. And that's the best asset of it. I mean, sure. Look, guys, I didn't know that Hunter Brown was going to add like a tick or two velocity. Okay? When I was sitting here last year, while I was like, I'm not in on Hunter Brown. He has dead zone movement. His four-seamer and his sinker are dead zone. And he relies so much on the location of those two pitches. They're great against right-handers. Awesome. That's it. And like when I think about like Brian Wu and Zach Wheeler, they also have really good command of their four-seamer and sinker, and they don't have the best movement on them, but they also have flatness to them. Mm-hmm. They also have a better extension than Hunter Brown has. And they have generally the same velocity, maybe a little bit less than Hunter Brown's, right? Also the other problem with Hunter Brown is that he doesn't have a way to deal with left-handers. And I think his four-seamer overperformed against them last year. He also had 20% put-away rates on his curveball and fastball that I feel like are unsustainable based on how he utilizes them. So it just feels like it's not supposed to work as well as it did. And I can't lean into it because I could see it just fall apart like really quickly if all of a sudden, hey, you know what? I can't find my sinker right now. Mm-hmm. You know, or I just not able to get my four seamer as high as before, or maybe my velocity cannot be held at 97. It's absolutely within the realm of possibility that happens. He sometimes does have like a cutter or a slider or the curveball working. The changeup was a 54% strike pitch to lefties last year. Like that's not it. So I'm still not as convinced that he's going to give you the same floor of other guys, because I'm not believing this being a plateau, but also B, that he has the same ceiling as the other ones who are ahead of him. That's really what it comes down to. And yeah, I just don't want to go for that. I'd rather just go for the other ones. Sorry, Hunter.
I get it. I'm with you. I mean, I have Hunter Brown 11th in my rankings, and I have somebody ahead of him who, you know, we're going to talk about on the next episode. So I wouldn't even call them reservations on Hunter Brown, but I get the desire to put him in the back of this group of like, hey, you're an ace and you're reliable, but maybe you don't have the same upside as some of these other guys.
Exactly. Yeah. And I gotta say that, the next episode is, I think, a lot more interesting because this one, the top 10 is pretty much, you might miss one name or so. But these are generally the guys that you've seen on every top 10 list. But the next one is where I really had to sit down and figure this out. And I guarantee you that number 11 is not what consensus is. And it's going to shock a lot of people. And I sat there, Eric, and I was like, I didn't take a look at this. For obvious reasons, we'll get into it for a while. And I sat there, I was like, how could I possibly not do this?
Yeah. It would shock a lot more people if I didn't mistakenly read his name out earlier when I went through this whole tier. But
You know what? I didn't realize you did that. Okay. Well, he's got to go watch the episode. Why? I'll explain myself.
Yeah.
And fascinating ordeal that's going on, I think, as a theory. But whew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turn this episode off. Go to the next episode. Let Nick explain himself. I'm Eric Samulski, the Pelican.
Nick Pollock, the Lion.
We'll check you on the next episode of On the Corner, going through Nick's top 400 starting pitchers.